Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Roderick Beaton's The Greeks: A Global History is a broad historical synthesis that follows Greek-speaking peoples and Greek cultural identity across more than three millennia. Rather than treating Greece mainly as the source of classical antiquity, the book places Greeks in a wider Mediterranean, European, and global setting. From the Bronze Age Aegean through Alexander's conquests, the Roman and Byzantine worlds, Ottoman rule, the modern nation-state, and the diaspora. Its genre is accessible narrative history, written for general readers while drawing on the author's long expertise in Greek culture and literature. The purpose is to explain continuity without suggesting that Greek identity stayed unchanged. Beaton emphasizes adaptation, mobility, language, religion, empire, and memory as forces that repeatedly remade what it meant to be Greek. The result is a corrective to histories that stop at antiquity and a guide to seeing modern Greece as part of a much longer global story. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Greek identity as a changing historical construction rather than a fixed inheritance. A central strength of the Greeks is its refusal to treat Greekness as a single unbroken essence. Beaton presents Greek identity as something repeatedly redefined by language, political allegiance, religion, education, and shared memory in the ancient world. Greekness was not identical with one state, because city-states such as Athens, Sparta, Corinth, and others competed fiercely while still recognizing common cultural markers. Under Alexander and his successors, Greek language and institutions spread across a vast Eastern Mediterranean and Near Eastern world, making Greek culture less territorially bound. In the Roman period, Greek identity survived partly because Greek education and literature retained prestige even after political power shifted to Rome. Later, in the Byzantine era, many Greek speakers understood themselves within a Christian Roman imperial framework rather than through modern ethnic nationalism. This long record helps explain why Beaton's argument is more subtle than a simple continuity narrative. He shows that continuity existed, especially through language and cultural memory, but it was sustained through transformation. The book, therefore, invites readers to see identity as historical work inherited, revised, contested, and adapted to changing political worlds. Secondly, the Greek world as a network shaped by migration, trade, conquest, and diaspora. Beaton's global framing depends on the idea that Greek history cannot be contained within the borders of modern Greece. From early maritime settlement and colonization around the Mediterranean and Black Sea to the Hellenistic kingdoms after Alexander, Greek speakers often lived in dispersed communities, linked by trade, language, religion, and education. This pattern continued in later centuries through merchants, scholars, refugees, sailors, and migrant communities across the Ottoman, Russian, Western European, and eventually transatlantic worlds. The result is a history in which movement is not incidental but foundational. Greek culture spread because people moved, but it also changed because those people encountered other languages, faiths, governments, and economic systems. This perspective makes the book different from a conventional national history. Modern Greece appears not as the natural container of all Greek experience, but as one late and important political outcome of a much wider historical field. The diaspora theme also clarifies why Greek identity often survived outside sovereign Greek rule. Schools, churches, commercial networks, print culture, and family memory could sustain Greek affiliation even when political authority belonged to Macedonian kings, Roman emperors, Ottoman sultans, or modern host states. Thirdly, Byzantium and Orthodox Christianity as central, not peripheral, to Greek history. One of the book's important corrections is its treatment of the Byzantine millennium as a core part of Greek history, rather than as an awkward interval between antiquity and the modern nation. Beaton recognizes that the empire usually called Byzantine was officially Roman and Christian. Yet Greek language and culture became increasingly central to its administration, theology, literature, and intellectual life. This complicates modern assumptions. The people of the empire were not simply ancient Greeks preserved in medieval form, but neither were they disconnected from earlier Greek traditions. Classical learning, biblical interpretation, imperial ideology, and Orthodox worship interacted in ways that reshaped Greek identity. The prominence of Christianity is especially important because modern readers sometimes associate Greek history mainly with pagan antiquity. Beaton shows that Orthodox Christianity became one of the strongest carriers of Greek communal memory under both Byzantine and Ottoman conditions. Monasteries, liturgy, clerical education, and church institutions helped preserve language and social organization. At the same time, the Byzantine story demonstrates that Greek history includes empire, theology, and Eastern Mediterranean politics, not only democracy, philosophy, and classical art. This broadens the reader's sense of what the Greek past contains. Fourthly, the Ottoman centuries and the making of modern Greek nationalism. The Greeks give substantial importance to the centuries of Ottoman rule because they formed the social and political background from which modern Greek nationalism emerged. Beaton avoids reducing this period to simple decline or passive oppression. Greek-speaking Orthodox communities lived within Ottoman structures that allowed certain religious and communal forms of organization, while also imposing hierarchy, taxation, and political subordination. In this setting, merchants, clerics, intellectuals, island communities, and diaspora networks played important roles in preserving and reimagining collective identity. The rise of modern Greek nationalism was therefore not merely a revival of ancient glory. It was shaped by Enlightenment ideas, Orthodox traditions, memories of Byzantium, European Philhellenism, economic change, and revolutionary politics. This layered account matters because it explains the tensions built into the modern Greek state from its beginning. The new nation drew symbolic power from antiquity, but many of its people also inherited Byzantine and Ottoman social worlds. Beaton's treatment helps readers understand why modern Greece has often negotiated between Western European expectations, Balkan realities, Orthodox heritage, and Mediterranean connections. The Greek War of Independence becomes part of a longer process of redefining Greekness in the Age of Nations. Lastly, modern Greece in global perspective beyond the classical heritage narrative. Beaton's final historical arc brings the story into the modern and contemporary world, where Greece is often viewed through narrow frames such as tourism, ancient ruins, economic crisis, or strategic geopolitics. The book places modern Greece within a larger history of state building, territorial expansion, population exchange, war, migration, dictatorship, democratization, European integration, and diaspora life. This approach helps explain why the modern country cannot be understood only as an heir to ancient Athens. It is also a product of 19th-century nationalism. The collapse of empires, the Balkan and World Wars, the Asia Minor catastrophe, Cold War politics, and the challenges of belonging to Europe while retaining distinct Eastern Mediterranean experiences. Beaton's global perspective is useful because it connects events inside Greece to wider movements of people and power. The movement of Greeks to and from Asia Minor, Egypt, Western Europe, North America, and Australia shows that modern Greek history remains transnational. The book also suggests that classical heritage can be both a resource and a burden. It gives Greece immense cultural visibility, but it can obscure the complexity of its medieval, Ottoman, and modern past. In conclusion, The Greeks' A Global History is best suited to readers who want a complete framework for Greek history, rather than a specialized study of one era. It will be especially useful for travelers, students, general history readers, and anyone whose knowledge of Greece is concentrated in classical Athens, Sparta, or Alexander. Its practical benefit is orientation. It helps readers connect ancient sites, Byzantine churches, Ottoman legacies, modern politics, and diaspora communities within one long historical pattern. Its intellectual benefit is more important. Beaton shows that Greek identity has endured not because it remained unchanged, but because it could be repeatedly adapted across empire, religion, migration, and state formation. Compared with many popular books on Greece, this one stands out by refusing to end the story with antiquity or to treat modern Greece as a faded afterlife of classical greatness. Compared with narrower academic studies, it offers breadth, continuity, and readability without relying on a single political or cultural episode. Its distinctive value lies in the scale of its synthesis. It connects the Aegean Bronze Age, classical city-states, Hellenistic expansion, Byzantium, Ottoman rule, nationalism, and diaspora into one coherent account. Readers looking for exhaustive detail on a single period may need more specialized works, but those seeking a reliable panoramic history will find it particularly rewarding. If you would like to support Roderick Beaton, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.